Okay, so I thought this morning I would talk about the first part of this sutra, which is by Dogen Zenji, Shoji, Birth and Death. So the first part of the text starts out with a koan. Dogen wrote, "Since there is birth in life and death, there is no life and death. It is also said that since there is no Buddha within life and death, they are not deluded in life and death." So these are two statements by the Zen masters, Jiaoshan and Dengshan. So Jiaoshan and Dengshan were Dharma brothers, and they were having an argument about this, which one is right. So they went to their teacher, and the upshot was that the teacher did say that one was right and one was wrong, but the one that was wrong was the one who asked the teacher who was right or wrong. So what does this mean? Since there is Buddha in life and death, there is no life and death. So Buddha is no inherently existing Buddha. We can't really say in a way what Buddha is. We have a historical Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, so we have some ideas about Shakyamuni Buddha. But essentially, Buddha nature, the nature of Buddha is all being, all things. So in some ways, you can't really pin it down. You have ideas about what Buddha is, but if your ideas are things like Buddha is perfect, Buddha never makes mistakes, I don't know, you know, something like that, then that's not really what Buddha is. So Buddha is all of reality, so how can you really say in some way, how can you say what Buddha is? So this Buddha in life and death, or birth and death, there is no birth and death. So this no birth and death is this aspect of no inherent existence. So he's saying, since there is Buddha, and that this Buddha lacks inherent existence, and this Buddha is our life and death, this Buddha is reality itself, then that means that there's no birth and death, because we can't say what that is. Birth and death are just labels that we give to things, but actually reality itself is process, right? There's no birth and death. There's just these labels that we give to these particular moments that we say, oh, this is birth, this is death, this is life, this is death. But actually, in some ways, we don't really know what that is. And then the next line is, it is also said that since there is no Buddha within life and death, we are not deluded in life and death. So as soon as we understand the true nature of what this no Buddha is, then we really understand what impermanence is. We understand where we get caught. We understand the nature of reality. So then we are not deluded about what birth and death or life and death is. Okay, so that's the kind of premise of the text here. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but this deep investigation about the nature of our life, that's what we're up to. What is it to say birth and death? What is it to say no birth and death? What is it to say no Buddha? What is it to say Buddha? So when we investigate these various aspects of the Dharma, then we start to investigate the nature of our own life. It's not abstract anymore. So then Dogen says, so essentially, these two statements are saying exactly the same thing from two different perspectives. So Dogen says, these are the words of Zen masters named Jiaoshan and Dengshan. Since these are the sayings of the people who attain the way, these sayings should definitely not be stated in vain. So even though this is confusing to us, these two statements may be confusing to us, He's saying, well, don't dismiss them. Don't just say, I don't care. I remember when I first started to practice, I went to this koan class with Reb Anderson. He was doing a class where he was going through all the koans in the Book of Serenity. I think there might be 100. And when I first started going to class, it's like koans. I could not understand them. As a matter of fact, it made me angry that I couldn't figure out what they were about. But I had this deep faith that they were about something, because I knew that this was something that was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years old, and that all these people had studied these enigmatic stories for, you know, all these years, and that they were a Dharma gate for realization. So I had faith that even though I couldn't figure out what in the world these were about, that there was something there for me to pay attention to. So that's what Dogen's saying. He's saying, you know, he's saying these guys, these two Zen masters, they were on to something. And also we know Dogen was on to something, and since he thought it was important to write about this, he's saying, you know, pay attention, pay attention. So these two statements about the nature of reality, the nature of birth and death, are basically, one statement is a kind of positive statement and saying there is something here, and the other statement is there is not. So, you know, which one of these statements is the right statement? That was what the koan was about. The two Dharma brothers, they go to the teacher and so who's right? Who's right? Am I right or is he right? And actually only one of the students went to the teacher with this question. The other one did not. So the student who wanted to know which is right, this kind of black and white, you know, definite answer to the teacher, he's the one who the teacher said, you're wrong. We have a tendency to do that. We want to say, well, it's got to be this or it's got to be that. But actually, this or that is predicated upon what is most helpful to us in that moment. So it might be the most helpful thing to us in that moment is to say, not this. To say, no self, no inherently existing self. To say, there's no there there. That might be what we need to hear in that moment. Or in another moment, we might need to hear something like, this is your Buddha nature. This deep part of yourself that resonates with reality. This is a thing that you can relate to. You can take refuge in. This is... You know, we can take refuge in the Dharma and refuge in the Buddha and refuge in the Sangha. That this is a real kind of tangible thing that we can have faith in. So sometimes that's what we need to hear. And sometimes we need to hear, nope, you're clinging, you're attached to this. Actually, there's no such thing as an inherent existing self. So what is it that you're holding on to? So our teachers say to us, depending on our personalities, right, and what's going on in our lives, our teachers might say, well, okay, it's here or it's over here. So we can't land in one place or the other. That doesn't work. And for the most part, we don't like that because we really want to land somewhere. We want to know. I want to know that this is the right way. But actually, the only way we can know whether it's the right way is to be in accord with reality itself, to be in harmony with, if you will, with the situation that's arising. So that has to include us, and it has to include everything else that's going on, which is tough, right? It's really tough to do that. But we can always try to keep an open mind, have a generous heart, be curious, so that will get us closer to that, so that we're not clinging to our own about ideas about things in such a way that it creates suffering for ourselves and others. So here we have this example of these two different views of talking about reality. And so that's how Dogen starts out. Then he says, those who want to be free of life and death should clarify the meaning of these statements. Okay? So when he says free from life and death, he's not saying that we somehow transcend our life. Actually, he's saying just the opposite. I remember when I was in my 20s, I kind of had this practice that I did. Do you remember that book, Be Here Now? Yeah. Those of us who have been around the block a few times. You can still get it. It's an interesting book. So I used to go and I would like meditate for hours at a time and sit full lotus and do mantras and do all this stuff that I kind of made up, to be honest with you. I mean, I didn't make it up. I read it in a book, but I didn't have a teacher. So I remember one time I was driving my car and I'd done something that was unskillful, and this friend of mine said, you know, something like, well, you're so angry, or I don't like the way you drive your car, or whatever. And I thought to myself, I'm done with transcending reality. I'm just going to, like, be here. You know, I'm just going to live my life. Forget this transcending business. So we have this, sometimes we have this idea that we need to transcend reality. We need to somehow be above our life in some way. That the way to do that is some kind of otherworldly event that's going to take us out of this world. While we're still in it, but we're going to somehow transcend this. So we say, you know, in Buddhist terms, we say, well, I'm going to get out of samsara, right? I'm going to go to nirvana. So, you know, in different schools actually have different statements about what they're up to. So in Theravadan Buddhism, there really is this teaching of the world is a samsaric place. It's filled with suffering. And the idea is to get off the wheel of birth and death and actually not be reborn and to attain something called nirvana, which even in their own teaching is unclear about what that is. It's not a place, right? It's not even a state of mind in some ways. So we have this one school, or we have a school like in Tibetan Buddhism, which has, I think, five or six different schools. So there are nuances within this. Their teaching is very much about birth and death. It's very much about rebirth, about how your next rebirth will be. That's not something that we focus on too much in Soto Zen. And the reason is that what our path statement has to do with is what Dogen's talking about here, which is this samsara nirvana is right here in this life. You know, this lifetime, not some other lifetime, but this lifetime, this moment, this time that we're living right now. So he says, if you want to be free of life and death, but this freedom that he's talking about is not about transcending life and death. It's about redefining, returning to reality as it is, or turning and integrating oneself with our true nature. This is what life and death is about. Not some notion we may have about this life and death as some samsaric realm, this saha world that we need to transcend. He says, seeking after Buddha outside of life and death is like trying to get to Yue, which is in the south, with the thrills and thralls or thrills or the like you have a cart and what you put the horse between, right, to draw the cart. Those two, I don't know what the... What
harness
are,
or something?
Huh?
Harness?
Yeah, the two pieces of wood that go on the horse is harnessed between them. So those are what are called, what is being translated here as thrills. It's interesting, there are various translations of this, but basically, all of them are saying the same thing, which is that seeking after Buddha outside of life and death is like trying to get to Yue in the south with the thrills of our cart heading to the north, or trying to see the northern stars while we're facing south. So he's saying, it's impossible, right? This is impossible. But this is the practice, this is the kind of vision we have about our practice that we have all the time, which is, you know, to transcend, somehow be in some otherworldly place other than our own life. And of course, the reason we do that is because our own life is painful, right? We're suffering. And so we're saying to ourselves, you know, get me out of this place. I don't want to be here anymore. I want to be some other place. And maybe that's some other place. It's called nirvana. Maybe that's some other place is if I, you know, do this or do that or whatever, I'm going to be able to transcend my life. But actually, our understanding of practice is that it's going into our lives that transforms our lives, not going somewhere else. Dogen talks about in Kato 20 Vines, he talks about in that fascicle about how you have to go into the vines themselves. You have to go into the problems. Go into your problems, transform your problems. So that's what our practice is, right? Because if we were happy, happy, happy all the time, we might not come to practice. Usually we come to practice because we're suffering, because something doesn't feel right. Practice is hard. It's hard to face yourself. It's hard to look at your ego. It's hard to look at the things that we cling to. It's hard to face the ways that we're unskillful. So practice is difficult. It's hard. Sometimes it's even hard. It's hard to sit zazen, right? It's hard to follow the schedule. That's one of the reasons we have a schedule in Zen and we follow the schedule in Zen, is because there's this way in which it's just giving yourself over. You have ideas about it. Maybe you get up in the morning and say, I don't want to go to zazen. But you go to zazen anyway. Because this is this relinquishment of the self in this way. So the schedule functions in that way. Going to work every day functions that way, right? When you get up in the morning to go to work, I would guess that there are some mornings that you really would prefer not to go to work. And yet, we go to work. For various reasons, we go to work. And some people really struggle with that, and some people don't. But the thing is that that's a kind of schedule that we've imposed upon ourselves for various reasons, that we really stick with it, you know. And that sticking with it, and that sometimes the struggle with sticking with it, is about giving up the self. That's a way you can see that kind of same feeling, you know, in our... that same kind of structure that we're functioning in a kind of everyday lay life, this business about going to work, which is similar to what it is to do the schedule in, say, a monastic environment. The monastic environment, it's relentless. You get up at 4 something in the morning, and it's just one thing after another until about 9:30 at night. So there's this way in which but you can escape, because as human beings we're very wily, can always figure out a way, right? But you're still facing in that direction, right? You're still looking for the Big Dipper in the right direction. So that's what we're trying to do, and this is this life and death. So studying the Buddha way, looking for attaining realization, what we're calling realization or actualization, whatever we may think that is to be found in our own life. And if we truly immerse ourselves in our own lives, any fantasies or ideas we have that are off the mark, we will be disabused of over time. So even though we don't exactly understand how this works, if we ground ourselves in our life, if we study the Dharma, something's going to happen, right? Something will happen. So we have faith in that. The translation of Shoji, life and death or birth and death, is all one word. So it's a hyphen. It's a hyphenate. It's like birth / and / death, or life / and / death. So the what's being conveyed there is that they are not separate things. That this is all one thing. Because we tend to want to separate them. We say, well, I was born at a certain time, or this thing arose at a certain time, and then, right, so it's sequential, there is birth, and then there is death. So we tend to want to sequentialize it. But Dogen's saying, no, it's all one thing. They're not separate things. There's this expression in Zen, when the donkey leaves, the horse arrives, or before the donkey leaves, the horse arises, or before the horse leaves, the donkey comes, right? So there's this way, what's being conveyed there is that there's this overlap like this. There's not some way that you can say this and this and this. It's actually all happening as a kind, is an interconnected, interpenetrating process. So, and also, how can we, birth and death, we're talking about the arising and falling of this moment. When does a moment start and when does it end? Can you tell me that? You know, when did this thing start and when did this thing end? When did your life start? We say, oh, my life started, I was born, I popped out of my mom's womb, right? But is that really when our life started? Is that really, you know, we can talk about it genetically and all these things, but we can also say, think of all the things that are required for us to thrive. The whole world. I've talked about this before because it's really very interesting to me right now. I went outside the other morning to get the paper. I think it was yesterday morning. It was just so pink. Did anybody see this?
Yes.
The sky was unbelievable. And I walked out and I looked at the sky and I thought, I am made for this world. It's like this world and I are the same. Because I find this so overwhelmingly beautiful. And the reason I do is because I am this world. This world is me, right? So where does that start and end? I am completely dependent upon the totality of the process of the world. As the world, as Dogen would say, is also completely dependent upon the process of my life as well. We're completely interconnected and interpenetrating with each other. So where does that start and end? Where is birth and death? You can't say. You can't say. Sometimes it might be helpful to say something about that. So this goes back to this notion of positive language, negative language. Negative language, you can't say, you can't say. Positive language, well, yes, maybe I can say. Yes, it is helpful for me to say right at this moment what this is. But at the same time, I can hold both of those things at the same time. So that's what part of the practice is to realize that they're not separate, that we can hold both of those at the same time. So Dogen says, life / and / death, or birth death. Not sequential, not separate, not what we think they are. So don't get caught there, is what he's saying to us. If we seek Buddha outside of life and death, we would accumulate the causes of life and death more and more and lose the path of liberation. If we seek Buddha outside of life and death, we would accumulate the causes of life and death more and more and lose the path of liberation. And Busho Dogen says, we are Buddha nature. Not we have the nature of a Buddha, we are Buddha nature. So this comes from the Nirvana Sutra, in which actually in some schools they say, you know, we can acquire Buddha nature. We can work really hard, and somehow, lifetime over lifetime, we can acquire this state of being able to actualize Buddha nature, or somehow incorporate or find this thing called Buddha nature. We can become the nature of a Buddha if we just work hard enough. Dogen's saying, no, we are Buddha nature, which is that we are all of this processes of life, and that this is Buddha nature. So there's a question that arises out of this, which is, does that mean that we are enlightened automatically, right? Like somebody asked me, I think Randy, you did say, well, are children enlightened automatically? And I said, no, right? The nature of reality itself is Buddha nature. So from our school, from our perspective, we say all of reality interacting is Buddha nature. We can say all of reality is the mind of Buddha, right? This processes that's happening. And that it is a good thing in the sense that it is completely supportive, that we completely depend upon the practice of all beings and our practice in order to support each other, the totality of this life. So he says, if we seek Buddha, if we seek this Buddha nature, if we seek this nature of a Buddha outside our own life and death, outside this life, then we're going to suffer because we're not going to find it there. Because that's not where it is. Because it is this life that we are living right now, and they're not separate. So he says, then we would accumulate the causes of life and death, which goes back to life and death as sequential, life and death as something that you need to get rid of, get out of, get away from. And then we would get caught more and more in that notion and that idea of how we understand the nature of our experience. So he's saying, don't get caught there. Don't try to get away from your life. You know, lots of people have probably all of you know Pema Chodron's book, Start Where You Are. Mm-hmm. So just the title of that book tells you what's up, right? Don't start where you think you should be. Don't start where you wish you were. Guess what, guys? Here we are, little lotuses in muddy water. And sometimes it's like, I think I'm drowning in muddy water. You know, I'm not a lotus. I'm just like this wilted, disgusting little flower who's trying to breathe muddy water. And man, this hurts. So I'd like to transcend this. I'd like to get out of this place. But again, you know, he said, Dogen's saying, no, this right, thoroughly investigating this. But at the same time, maybe holding this lightly. One of the things I find really helpful, you know, the older we get, we like cycle around stuff, right? It's like you start to say, oh yeah, I've done this before. I've done this thing. I've been here before. And I also noticed that it always passes. Like, we're kind of like, you know how little kids are? It's like they fall down and they're crying and you say, oh, look at that over there. And they look over there and they totally forget the fact that they've been crying. Like, it's amazing. Oh, look at this. But we're like that too, actually. We're not any different. We might hold on to it longer. We remember it longer. But at some point, inevitably, we get distracted. Something comes up and we get distracted. Well, there's a piece of cake over there. Go ahead over there. knowing that happens, I find actually quite helpful because it makes it easier to stay in that place. Makes it easier to know that actually this place is empty of inherent existence. This place is not permanent. This suffering will not last forever. And that makes it easier for me to be there in the midst of that and say, okay, what's this up? What's up with this? I can be curious about this. I can try to hold this lightly. So this is this willingness to be in birth and death, this willingness to be in our lives right now. I think that I'm going to stop there. I think that's enough for today.